Hello everybody, my name is Alan Sandkirtan and I'm the author of the Marshmallow and Chocolate series of books. People often ask me, where does the inspiration for my books come from? All my books are inspired by my dreams. I woke up one morning with five words running through my mind. I knew that I had to go and sit down and write them down. As I began writing, the storyline unfolded in my head. Before I knew where the time had gone, I had produced 80 pages in my notebook. That was the beginning of Beguiled, the first book in the Marshmallow and Chocolate series. I hope you enjoy it. Dedication. This book is for my son Daniel and my wife Celeste, who helped shape our common reality and made this book possible. Also, for those of you who remain forever young at heart, and for children everywhere, please accept this book and may it enrich your awareness and experience of life wherever you choose to live. Beguiled, Introduction. In this story, two wicked witches, Callistra and Queen Draconia, attempt to take control of all trade throughout the mythical world of Heart. The witches collect the tears of sadness and regret from thousands of people and distill them into a sadness potion, which they used to poison all the chocolate exported from the island kingdom of Arcadia. They are assisted to achieve their aim by an alliance of pirates under the control of Admiral Dunatelia. But unlike the witches, the pirates have no grand plans. They simply want a share of all the gold and they don't care how they come by it. As the production and distribution of chocolate gradually comes under her control, the Dark Queen captures Princess Helen from Arcadia and holds her hostage in her castle tower. She now holds an ace up her sleeve. She knows that Prince Charming will be easily lured into her web of deceit by this delightfully tempting bait. King Cedric of Elysium is alarmed to hear of the plot to undermine the well-being of his kingdom. In response, he decides to send Sir Robert Hughes to the Dark Queen's realm to find what was used to poison the chocolate. He is to be accompanied by Prince Garvin, who is disenchanted and uninterested in the affairs of state. Their almost impossible quest is to return with a list of ingredients for an antidote and a vial filled with water from the sacred fountain of eternal youth. Unknown to King Cedric, Prince Garvin is beguiled by a vision of Princess Helen and promises to find her and rescue her regardless of the personal danger. Sir Robert sees the challenge as an opportunity to find his missing wife and return her to her family. The two would-be adventurers appear totally unsuitable and sure to fail. While preparing for their journey, our would-be adventurers have separate encounters with a village girl. Disguised as a pauper, the fairy godmother appears and gives them both new names, Sir David and Sir Richard Alexander. She warns them of the dangers and challenges that lie before them and bestows special blessings on them. She empowers them to find and use their own powers of inner magic to reverse any spells cast upon them before disappearing in a flash of starlight. Read the Marshmallow and Chocolate series to find out if Sir David and Sir Richard can discover their own inner powers to overcome the powerful external forces pitted against them. Can they find and free Princess Helen? Will they succeed in finding the antidote? And more importantly, is it possible for them to bring peace and return happiness to the people and the countries of Heart? Beguiled, Chapter 1. A Bolt of Lightning. The air was growing heavier and more oppressive, closing in on two travellers, braving a steep, winding road. black storm clouds blotted out the sun, and the rumbling sound of thunder echoed ominously through the valley. Their hair stood straight out from their heads, waving about in a bizarre electric dance in the moist mountain air. "Sir David, we need to take shelter now, and this may be as good as anywhere else. But as curious as the symbol at the entrance is, I don't remember this rock formation from my last journey. We need to be careful. Anything could happen here in this lonely mountain pass," warned Sir Richard. Cautiously, Sir David led the way forward until they were safely cocooned in the cavernous opening beneath the overhanging rock. Another ear-splitting crack of thunder rent the air behind them. The two horses reared wildly, dragging their reins. It took all David's and Richard's strength to keep them from bolting in fright. As the horses settled, the two adventurers turned their attention back to the freshly carved symbol on the face of the rock wall. Examining it more closely, David traced the shape of the figure with his fingers. A strange humming noise began to fill the cavern. As it grew louder, the rock began to vibrate in harmony and began to blur in their vision. The sound within the cavern gradually increased. As it reached its peak, the symbol on the wall faded and disappeared. At the same time, the rock wall before them dissolved, leaving a cloud of glittering particles floating in the shadowy half-light. The humming gradually subsided, and once free of its prison of sound, the shimmering cloud drifted off, revealing a magnificent new reality. From their vantage point, David and Richard saw a road winding down the valley toward the horizon. It was following the course of a well-vegetated river corridor. The road curved to the right, pointing toward two large copses of trees that stood out distinctly on a hilltop in the distance. "Look, Richard, the direction of the road forms the same symbol as the one on the rock wall. Look, there is a curve to the right, pointing at two copses of trees on that hill. I think we should follow this path," David suggested. "We were told to follow the signs and proceed with trust. This is a sign, so I feel we have no other option." "If we enter this magic realm," cautioned Richard, "we may never come back." "Perhaps not," David replied, "but it seems to me that if the enchanting princess is a prisoner of the wicked witch, Queen Draconia, and if she is locked in the castle of darkness and despair, then we need to seek out that reality with haste. Then we can release her from her prison. That was my promise to the beautiful princess who asked for my help, and I made a sacred vow to her young sister, Princess Rosie, that I would fulfill my mission, protect Princess Helen, and return her to her family in Arcadia. I believe you made a similar pledge, did you not?"
"Indeed I did, Sir David, and a promise is a promise. So no matter what may come of our adventure, I will honour my pledge."
"Then we must proceed, Sir Richard, but we must remain aware. Even though we have to visit Draconia's reality to free Princess Helen and fulfil our quest, that reality is not our reality. When we visit there, we should not let it have any power over us. We must support each other in this noble quest and not succumb to those fears. When we are ready, I have no doubt that a safe passage will be provided back to our own reality, and I am confident of our success and our safe return. Are you coming? You said you pledged to support me."
"You are perfectly right, and I trust your leadership completely. Lead on."
As the two noble knights crossed the threshold into the brave new reality before them, Prince Garvin woke with a start. In his dreamy reverie, Richard's words were ringing in his ears. "Lead on."
"Oh," Prince Garvin exclaimed, "what a strange dream. Something about a princess and two wicked witches, and there were two travellers trying to control their horses in a raging storm. There was a cave with a tunnel leading to another world. Then, rather strangely, the older man said, "Lead on." It seemed he was talking directly to me. "Prince, you should write that down," said another unknown voice. Prince Garvin looked around the dimly lit room to see who was there. I'm sure it was just a dream. And even if the man in the dream was talking to me, it probably doesn't mean anything. Without giving it any more thought, Prince Garvin laid back, closed his dreamy eyes, and drifted back to sleep. Little did he know that this dream was only a hint of what lay before him in the near future. Beguiled, Chapter 2, A Highly Prized Ship. Several years before, Captain Sven was a junior officer in the Utopian fleet of the mighty Chan Lu. He had spent his early childhood in Arcadia and was only 10 when he left home to go to sea and serve aboard the Great Chan's flagship. For the next 6 years, he studied navigation and sailed with the greatest sailors in the Great Chan's merchant fleet. Sven was now a skilled navigator, a respected leader of men, and at the peak of his career. Things seemed to be going right for him, and if he could avoid shipwreck and pirates, his future was pretty well assured. During the previous week, Sven had come across an abandoned Arcadian ship drifting in the middle of the ocean. It seemed that ships could not only disappear from Arcadian waters, they could reappear in strange and unusual places. There were few shipwrecks in Arcadian waters. Ships were either there or not, which was a unique feature of Arcadian life. This didn't bother the Arcadian sailors, because they had learned to live with their reality a long time ago. No one gave much thought to these matters. There was no rational explanation that fitted the facts. Things were what they were. After a close inspection, there was much debate among the boarding party about how and why the mystery ship had come to be abandoned. Everything seemed to be intact and in perfect working order, but there was no sign of the crew. Some instruments were missing, and the holds were empty. When Sven's crew searched the ship, they found no sign of a struggle. However, one of the ancient survival pods was missing. This was a mystery, because Arcadian crews were said to prefer death than abandoned ship. A captain who lost such a ship was unlikely to get another command, so abandoning an undamaged ship was unheard of. This made the missing survival pod all the more mysterious. Sven couldn't be sure of the ship's origin, but the presence of the one remaining pod and the absence of some key navigation instruments was a strong clue. Arcadian captains were under strict instructions not to let their prized navigation equipment fall into the hands of foreigners, especially not pirates. They didn't share their secrets with anyone. There was a strict code of conduct that dictated these things, and it was far more than a matter of personal pride. Another strange feature of this ship was that mounted on the main topmast was a bright ruby-red crystal about an arm's length in diameter. The crystal pulsed in the sunlight. It was the sleekest and most mysterious ship Sven had ever seen. After going aboard, memories of strange dreams began to surface in Sven's mind, haunting him. Conflicting thoughts began lapping the inner boundaries of his consciousness, rippling through his being. Just the thought of some of his dream experiences made his hair stand on end. He shivered as a sense of excitement merged with ominous premonitions of doubt and fear. Did the oddly shaped crystal indicate that this was not an Arcadian ship at all? Could it have materialized there after coming from a different time and place. After all, as skillful as the Arcadian people were, they were not known for their ability to craft finely cut crystal and glass. They were definitely not skillful enough to create a crystal as large as that. But somehow, the ship was familiar. Had he sailed in it before? Perhaps in his dreams or on an Asia sea in some weirdly parallel world. Wherever it was and wherever it came from, it was a prize for the taking, and Sven was not about to give it up for anyone. Brushing off his fears and the wild superstitions of his companions, Sven immediately took possession of the ship in the name of the Great Chan. He did so with the aim of sailing it triumphantly back to the Great Chan's home port in Utopia. He could see it now, and when he arrived, he would be an instant hero. During the last few days and nights, the crew struggled to control the mystery ship, and they desperately tried to decipher the mysterious symbols engraved on the instruments and controls. But so far, their efforts had been without success. They were still unable to control it or set a course. In fact, they were no closer now to understanding the mystery ship than when they had first come aboard. The ship definitely seemed to have a mind of its own. Captain Sven was convinced that the instruments, controls, and charts found in the great cabin were not created on and didn't refer to places on the planet Hart. Many of the symbols were similar in shape to symbols in other kingdoms. The more familiar ones could easily have been copied, except that if they were copied upside down and back to front. The symbols had been crafted into distinct groupings, which could have been words or possibly even sentences. To add to the sense of mystery, none of the charts they found resembled maps of any place they were familiar with. Everything they saw defied their logic. To Sven and his makeshift crew, the language was completely unintelligible. It was a language unlike anything the crew had ever encountered before. Captain Sven had a general idea where he was, but he couldn't be precise. He was renowned for holding a vast library of charts in his mind and being able to reproduce important details of them at will. But his memories were vague about the islands of the Arcadian archipelago. Even the best charts contained no details of the inner islands of Arcadia whatsoever. The reason for this was simple. No foreign sailors had ever managed to penetrate the maze and map them.